This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 20 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And John is not here today. He is currently driving across country to break into Bad Robot and steal a copy of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
This isn't going to be released until after he's done, right?
I hope not, because, yeah, assuming that he's successful, maybe he'll share it with us and we'll get to see it early, too.
Oh, you would love that. Yeah. And I would be indifferent.
Oh, come on. You're looking forward to it just as much as everyone.
I really don't care.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Yeah, it's exciting times for Star Wars.
I actually think it's really pathetic.
Yeah, I don't know. We have to go back. We will do this because we're coming up on our 5-year anniversary, like next week. And I was listening back to our very first episode, and there were three things in Star Wars that you cared about.
Yep.
Do you remember what they were?
Well, this is a PG show, so I can't bring up one of them.
Well, you could kind of. So what was the first thing?
The first thing, I don't know what the order I had was, but there was after the original trilogy, sexual scenarios involving various characters from the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And the original trilogy.
That was it. Yeah. Now we're getting after the original trilogy, dude.
No, so we're getting some pathetic thing. It's not the same thing as the original trilogy being continued. It's not. It's a different landscape entirely.
And we shall see. We shall see. I don't know.
No, but you don't need to see. It's a fact.
Yeah. Oh, I do need to see, but yeah, I mean, hey, regardless of that, I mean, the idea that they just announced this last week, the idea that in the span of 5 months and 10 days, we will have 2 new Star Wars movies.
I don't know what that means.
They're releasing 2 Star Wars movies 5 months and 10 days apart. Can you imagine? Can you imagine your little 10-year-old mind if someone told you that? I mean, what would you do? What would you think? I mean, how could you process that information? And now it's happening.
My 10-year-old mind would probably be pretty excited.
Yes.
I'm not going to do math. My 30-something-year-old mind? I've seen too many of these things fall apart, and I'm not excited about a title anymore. I'm not excited about a franchise that's overseen by a corporation anymore. If I heard that somebody who I trusted was making something, I would be excited about that thing. I am no longer excited about the name Star Wars being put on something that is released into theaters, because that is a meaningless connection to nothingness.
Well, the people making Episode 7 seem pretty damn solid, but I'm
sure that except for all of the names we've heard. So
Lawrence Kasdan?
Uh-huh, Lawrence Kasdan.
Yes. Okay. Well, regardless of that, I'm sure that that's something that we'll talk about maybe around late December on this show.
Because the next one is coming out at December? It's December now?
Yes, December 18th, I believe.
So Star Wars comes out in December now. That's fun.
Well, the next 2 Star Wars are coming out in December, but then Episode 8 is coming out May 26th, 2017, which is a day after the 40th anniversary. So, yeah. So anyway.
It was only a 2-year gap?
Year and a half. Year and 5 months. And there's going to be a movie in between. So.
That's weird.
It's going to be cool.
No.
We shall see.
No.
But. The reason why we're talking about this, the reason why we're talking about Star Wars here, we're going to talk about the fifth film in the William Shatner cinematic universe.
Yes.
Which is Fanboys.
Star Trek fans.
Well, it is about Star Trek fans as well, but mainly it's about Star Wars fans.
Oh, what's with those guys?
I don't know. They're the worst, aren't they?
Suckers. I mean, they don't even care about good stories.
This movie is directed by Kyle Newman, who, very strangely, is also the director of the new Taylor Swift music video. I don't know how that works.
Oh, it's a very strict causal connection.
Okay. But he himself is a huge Star Wars fan. He's frequently a guest on Rebel Force Radio and the Force Cast or whatever it is, and he's known for being a prequel apologist in some circles.
God, what's wrong with those people?
I like the prequels.
You're terrible.
Yeah. So this is a movie which came out in 2009, and the premise, even though it was in the works for a long time, I think they shot it in 2006, because I remember being at Star Wars Celebration 4 in 2007, where Kyle Newman and the cast were there to preview clips from the movie, and that was 2 years before the thing actually came out.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer so long that I forgot that it was a movie.
Yeah.
And I came to believe that it was a parody trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out to be an actual movie.
But the movie, I think it was in development back before episode 1 came out, if I'm not mistaken, or right around that time. I think it was a fairly autobiographical story from the writer, I believe it was Ernie Cline. The film is about a group of Star Wars fans who the year is 1998, and Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, is about to be released in like 4 months or whatever.
Yep, went to see Meet Joe Black. They watched the trailer. They're like, oh man, I can't wait to see this movie. Did you see that guy with the weird voice? He looks amazing.
Right, it's right around that time. And the issue, the drama, the conflict here comes in that one of them is dying of cancer. So he is probably not going to survive to see the release of the new movie. And in an effort to sort of bond, the friends decide to do something that they were talking about doing back in fifth grade, which is drive across country and break into Lucasfilm headquarters. Mm-hmm. And what the plan now is to break into Lucasfilm headquarters and steal a print of the movie in order to watch it. And it's one of those things where all of them are sort of aware that this is a ridiculous idea that would never work, but they decide that they need to do this more than anything as a way of bonding as friends. You know, it's like one last adventure for them. And along the way, they get into various adventures of their own, you know, through various conflicts and stuff like that with people who they meet.
The technical term is hijinks.
Hijinks is very much sort of a road trip movie.
Yes, like the movie Road Trip.
Yes, and eventually they end up at Lucasfilm, and you know, we won't ruin the movie for anyone who hasn't seen it.
We're not going to ruin the movie.
No.
He doesn't see the movie. They settle for watching an early pre-visualization for Indiana Jones 4.
That's may or may not be accurate, but it's not accurate. So
it may or may not be, but it isn't.
So at one point, the reason why this ties into what we're discussing here as a Star Trek podcast is because at one point they meet up in Texas with Harry Knowles, the famed owner and creator of Ain't It Cool News, who back then was at the height of his popularity. And they meet him and are looking for info from a contact about how to break into the ranch, right? Skywalker Ranch.
Yes.
And he says, okay, I'll give you this info. You need to go meet this guy in Vegas. And, you know, here's a code word and everything for you to use. And they're like, how will we know who he is? And he says, you'll know. So they say, okay. And they go to Vegas. And through a whole bunch of stuff with Seth Rogen and as the leader of a band of Star Trek fans who are out to get these guys and everything like that, the person who they're going to meet in Vegas is William Shatner. And William Shatner has all of the schematics and the technical readouts of that battle station known as Skywalker Ranch, and he gives it to them in order for them to sort of complete the final leg in their journey.
And to get that information, he had to kill a lot of Bothans.
Yes, he did. He did. So let's take this back to the beginning, I guess, and just say, what do you think about fanboys?
It's all right. I mean, it's not great cinema. It holds up as a movie, though, which I wasn't certain about before seeing it, considering that it sat on a shelf for 43 years. I'm not going to do the math,
it's
but it was a long
years.
Time. It was a big chunk of time, and that's never a good sign. I heard that it went through a lot of changes, and then when I saw the movie, I was like, oh, maybe they went through some changes, and then we're like, no, let's not do that.
Well, yeah, from what I understand, you know, the way that it went, because it is kind of interesting, especially for, you know, the sort of subject of this show, which is the creation of movies and stuff. This guy had written the script. It was, I guess, very personal and everything like that. And they brought on Kyle Newman, who is a first-time director. I think it's the only movie that he's made which has been released since then, although he's got another one which is coming out very soon called Barely Lethal, which I think is about teenage spies or something like that.
I wonder what that title's a play on.
And it, from what I understand, was seen as maybe not the most marketable thing in the world. And there were a lot of changes which were made to it as sort of like a work in progress kind of thing. I remember at one point Scott Mosier, who is Kevin Smith's producer, who has also edited all of Smith's earlier movies with Smith, he was actually hired by the Weinstein Company to re-edit the film. And he went in and I think actually shot a few new scenes. I think that's where, like, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes actually make a cameo in this, along with the third guy in that scene is their documentarian, who also played, he played not Kinky Kelly, but the sexy stud in Clerks 2. Anyway, and...
Because the other one's a horse.
A donkey, but yeah, that's neither here nor there.
Oh, you're right, it's a donkey. I forgot about that. They say it a million times in the movie, and I forgot that it was a donkey. I should never see that movie again.
Regardless of any of that, the point is that it went through a lot of changes. At one point, they brought in this guy, Steve Brill, who is not very popular amongst movie fans. He's a director. He's the director of Little Nicky.
Brillo pads are named after him, because he is also coarse.
He's directed a number of things which people dislike, and he reshot a bunch of stuff, And at one point, there was actually a big push by the Weinstein Company, who produced it, to take out the cancer subplot, yes. which a lot of people objected to because that was basically, you know, gutting the heart of the movie, you know?
On a very practical level, if you take out the motivation for doing it, then it really just seems like a bunch of douches trying to break into a building for completely selfish and stupid reasons.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's obviously not the movie that any of these people were trying to make. And there was actually a whole big campaign online and petitions, and they talked about, you know, boycotting Darth Weinstein and everything.
I know, the crazy thing is that those always work.
Well, this time it actually did.
I know.
Even though it took 3 years, it finally, you know, went to theaters in a version which I think the filmmakers would all consider to be the best version out there. There was talk of there being, like, you know, the compromised studio cut being released in theaters and then the director's cut being on video. But in the end, and when I was at Celebration 4 and the director was there, I asked him, I'm like, a bunch of people have come in and made a bunch of changes to your movie. You know, are you upset about that? Do you want to get rid of that stuff or whatever? And he's like, no, it's at a place now where I'm, you know, back on it or working on it or whatever. And there are elements which they have made, which I'm keeping in the movie because I like them. They're good. And, you know, it makes for the best movie. So even though there's stuff in there which was not part of the original version of the film, it is still, I think, the director-preferred version which is out there.
Well, it does play like a movie that was built, like, independently by a bunch of people who had a crazy idea for a movie, and then when somebody thought it had a chance to make money, if they just threw a little bit more spectacle in there, they threw some more spectacle in there, and you can tell when that shows up.
Yeah.
But it is a road movie, so the idea of, like, suddenly stopping the story and dealing with some spectacle for a few minutes, you sort of expect that to occur.
Right,
expect
it that works. Spectacle. Yeah.
It's a spectacle.
And the cameos and stuff which are made are really kind of interesting and funny in that there's some where it's like, oh, obviously they threw that in there because they wanted people to see this person, like Shatner, of course. That's the one which is most integral to the movie and which is referenced multiple times. But Harry Knowles makes sense. It's not even it's an actor playing Harry Knowles. It's Ethan Suplee,
yeah,
from Mallrats and stuff.
Because they couldn't get Harry Knowles to play himself from that time.
I guess not. I don't know. I don't know why they did it.
He doesn't leave his palace for anything other than, like, a good Sarlacc sacrifice.
That's quite possible. Billy Dee Williams shows up in there.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Fisher shows up in there.
She does.
And then, you know, like we said, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. And all of those were the sort of like, hey, look, kind of things. But there's a number of cameos as well, which I think are more of a case of, like, these are friends of whoever happened to be making the movie at that particular time. And now you look at it and you're like, whoa, there's some serious star power for, like, people who are literally in it and have, like, one line and then leave. And it's not like they were, like, big, you know, cameos at the time. But now you look at it and you're like, that's a pretty big cameo. There's, basically a lot of the Apatow crowd. It's Seth Rogen, he plays two roles, and that's kind of an extended role that he has. And we'll talk about him in a little bit because that's kind of integral to our discussion here on the Star Trek podcast. But other people, Will Forte shows up.
Yeah.
Danny McBride. Craig Robinson, there's a few others where it's just like, wow, what's he doing here all of a sudden? That's strange, but whatever.
Well, Goldberg's from the comedy crowd, and the comedy crowd has a lot of overlap with the, like, sketch comedy and improv comedy crowd. And
yeah.
There's a whole bunch of overlap there with The Office and the...
And Jay Baruchel is in the movie, you know, and he's obviously friends with all those guys. And yeah, the other people in the movie are, well, Kristen Bell, the guy who plays Jimmy Olsen in Superman Returns. He's sort of like the lead.
Yeah, okay.
Along with the guy from The Girl Next Door, who's not Emil Hirsch or what's his name? I forget the dude's name. Because
David Spade.
You look at The Girl Next Door, and there's like the three guys, the three friends, and one of them is went on to be Emil Hirsch, who's like a big star.
He wasn't when he made the movie, but afterwards he became Emil Hirsch.
Yes. And then the other guy is the guy who has gone on to be in a lot of critical movies and stuff like that, and that's Paul Dano. But then there's Chris Marquette, who, when you watch Girl Next Door, you think, this is the guy who's going to be the breakthrough guy. He's the funny guy. He's the comic relief sort of thing. And, it's a comedy, but he's the crazy guy. He's the Randall of that movie. And, you know, he's the one who didn't really make it big, but he is in this movie, along with, you know, well, everyone else from that we mentioned. Dan Fogler plays a big role. Sam Huntington is the guy from Superman Returns. And, a few other people here and there. But that's sort of like the core.
But you all saw the movie because of Kristen Bell in the Slave Leia costume. It's just a fact. Let's all admit that and move on.
It's kind of funny, though, I will say here, along the lines of this being a Star Trek podcast talking about fanboys, that when I was at the Star Wars convention, which was obviously filled with Star Wars fans, one of the questions was, to the cast was, are you guys Star Wars fans? And Kyle Newman was like, oh, absolutely, I love Star Wars. Star Wars is my life. I'm one of you. Kristen Bell was like, yeah, I really like Star Wars. Sam Huntington's like, yeah, I really like Star Wars. And Jay Baruchel was like, I have to admit, I've always been much more of a Star Trek fan. I'm a Trekkie. I'm sorry. Star Wars is cool. Whatever. I like it. But my heart is with Star Trek.
It's important that we all pick sides.
Yes. Well, it is important when it comes to this movie because that's like a whole big subplot of this movie, which is picking sides. You know, these guys, they work at a comic book store and they keep a little phaser in the display case in order to out Trekkies so that they can know not to serve them. They discriminate against Trekkies in a big bad way. They go to Riverside, Iowa, the birthplace of Captain Kirk, just to basically troll a bunch of Trekkies led by Seth Rogen. They end up destroying a statue which has been made to commemorate the battle between Kirk and Khan.
I think now's a good time for me to give my I have a dream speech.
Okay. I don't know what
that
means.
I have a dream that one day we all stop caring about these dumb things.
Yes, and maybe one day we will. But in the meantime, when they go to Vegas, it turns out that the reason why they're going there and the place that they're going to is a Star Trek convention, which is nice, seeing as how that's where the actual Star Trek conventions are. That's a cool little thing. And the reason why they're going there is because of William Shatner. But along the way, they run into all of the Trekkies who they, dissed back in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And
it's Vegas, where anything is legal.
Right.
Including murder.
So that's sort of where that conflict comes in. But there is a lot of Star Wars versus Star Trek stuff. And, while it's all in good fun, definitely Star Trek is presented as sort of the loser movie franchise or television franchise, science fiction franchise. So,
yeah, they're different genres, but what are you gonna do?
Yeah, what can you do? But that's definitely the slant that this movie takes. So,
well, what I choose to do is look down my nose at both parties,
which is fair enough.
Like, oh, guys, come on. Don't you all know that Dune is better than both?
They do have this great moment in there where the Star Wars fan that Seth Rogen plays who has like a bunch of Star Wars tattoos. Like one arm is dedicated to the light side and one arm is dedicated to the dark side. And he's like, oh, but guys, you got to check this out. And he takes off his shirt, and on his back is a huge tattoo covering his entire back of Jar Jar Binks and little Anakin Skywalker with their arms folded facing back to back. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, these guys, these two guys, they're going to be the coolest, you know. It's a funny little moment.
Yes, it's a funny little moment presaging decades of regret.
It's funny because, like, there was that one guy, I don't know if you saw this, but the day after Thanksgiving, which is when the trailer for Episode 7 came out, there was one guy who went to a tattoo parlor and got that little ball droid tattooed on his arm, and he very proudly posted it on the internet, you know, saying, like, I'm the first guy to get a tattoo from Star Wars Episode 7. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Kevin Smith even pointed out on his podcast, he's like, they made a joke about that in Fanboys. You know, how do you know? It's like everyone loves that droid now. That droid looks really cool, but...
You know, I'm fuzzy. Yeah. I when I first saw that droid, I thought that it was a previously existing type of droid with a ball.
It looks like R2's head on a ball, essentially, is what it is.
To me, it looks like a droid that has a ball. Like, I got a ball, guys. I know that you dropped your ball, and like you were like, hey, little help. And I'm like, yeah, I've got it. I'll bring your ball back. This is how I move a ball. I use my jets.
The cool thing about that droid, that ball droid, is apparently it's a practical effect. I mean, you look at it and you're like, how could that be? You know, I mean, in this era of CGI, you just assume, but... apparently, whatever it is, it's just like a thing on a rod and stuff or whatever, but that's actually like a puppet. It's a practical effect.
Okay. I didn't put any thought behind it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway. So where were we? Ah, yes.
We were talking about balls.
Yes. So Fanboys, on the whole, to me, I guess I haven't even said what my opinion of the movie is. I like it a lot. You know, I was looking forward to this movie. I remember hearing about the idea behind it long before it had ever even been shot, back when they were just trying to get the script made, because the guy who developed it, I think it was Ernie Klein, he's really big in the fan community, I think, and he had a lot of association with, like, Ain't It Cool News, and Harry Knowles was sort of championing this script long before, I think even before Episode 1 came out, honestly. And so I was looking forward to this, you know, a lot. And I actually got to see an early screening of it. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. You know, I have to say, I mean, honestly, the fact that, you know, I was very much, you know, in the category of these guys where, you know, I was looking forward to Episode 1 more than anything else, you know, when it came out. I mean, that sort of, it took me back to that time and place, and that sort of, like, it, for, in a lot of ways, it was sort of like the height of Star Wars fandom, in that, you know, people were sort of bonding together over their love for this franchise before this new movie came out. And it wasn't really so much about the new movie as it was about, you know, the excitement for something which had been gone for, you know, 16 years or whatever. It was a really fun time to be a fan, I have to say, regardless of how good or bad the movie was. So it was kind of cool how they were able to capture that. And it is a nice little touching story, and it is funny. And William Shatner is in it, and he plays himself. So let's talk about that. When they see William Shatner finally, they meet him in sort of a back room of a casino, and they're like...
It's very All the President's Men.
Yeah.
It's All the President's Men.
And it's one of those things where they're like, we need to go to this place, we need to give this guy a code word, and... you know, then he will give us this information. And they do that, and William Shatner is the one who shows up. In fact, You could say that he beams in, because they go into that room and you hear the original series transporter sound, right? And then there he is. And he's like, oh, okay, here's this info, you know, you need to break into this thing, blah, 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 that's cool, whatever. And they're like, how did you get this information? And he's like, I'm William Shatner. I can get anything. And then they start asking him things like, can you get this? Can you get that? And he's like, I can get anything, you know?
Yeah.
And he just says it because that's William Shatner. He can get anything, you know?
It's true. Every year he gets another 5 years of life.
There you go. You know, that's just the way it works because he's William Shatner.
Yeah.
So I liked his performance in this a lot because, for one thing, even though he's only in one scene, it's very funny. It's a very funny scene, and it sort of plays to his persona of, like, the best person in the world. And I'm always sort of a fan of that sort of thing, because it's become like a running joke between us and our friends, where it's like, well, William Shatner's the best, obviously, you know? Look at him, he's William Shatner. And then when you see William Shatner saying, like, well, yes, you're right, that's funny, because he's in on the joke. But the other thing that I like about it is how, even though he's only in the one scene, it plays throughout the rest of the movie. His information is what gets them into Skywalker Ranch. And when they get busted, spoilers, one of the calls that George Lucas makes down to them, you never see George Lucas, but he is sort of like talking to them through a security guard. He said, you know, he says at one point, did William Shatner have anything to do with this? And they're like, no, he didn't. And Lucas is like, okay, fine, you know. And I love that. The fact that they sort of like build into it, that there's this history. And like William Shatner is like, you know what? I don't like George Lucas for whatever reason, you know, whether it's because of the Star Trek, Star Wars thing or something else. But he's like, I've got information and I can take down Skywalker Ranch using these kids. And that's what I'm going to do.
Because William Shatner is George Lucas's con.
There you go. Yeah. So what did you think about Shatner's performance in this movie?
Well, when I was waiting for this movie for a very long time and forgot that it was a thing and then became convinced that it wasn't a real thing, and then when I heard that it was a real thing, the thing that I heard that told me that it was a real thing and reminded me that it existed was somebody saying, I heard William Shatner's in it.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that, okay, that seems fine. I can see that being in there. I mean, like, they have to up the crazy at some point. If they don't go completely crazy with this storyline, it really just seems like it's a bunch of people who are about to go to jail. Yeah. And when William Shatner shows up, it actually does elevate the movie from the silly lark that it's on into something a little bit more mythic. Something that has farther reaching implications and is a little bit less realistic, because, I mean, like, he does emerge like Deep Throat from the shadows with
he
secret information.
In.
That's
he
his text message in. Notification sound on his phone.
I don't think so. I think he beamed in there.
Okay, fine. But if he beams in, that's even like another pound of crazy. And it also makes it seem like, you know, who cares if George Lucas knows that William Shatner was in on it? He has a transporter. He can do what he wants.
I don't know. See, to me, like, I think that that's kind of cool because it actually sort of leads into, you know, the thing about whether or not it fits into Shatner cinematic universe continuity or whatever, because there's that whole thing in Fanboys where they're like, how did you get here? And he's like, I beamed in, right? Doesn't he say he beamed in at one point?
You just or said fanboys. You just said fanboys.
I'm sorry, in Free Enterprise.
Yeah.
Or does he say I parachuted? I forget. I think he said I beamed in.
It doesn't matter. I've said before that it is a unified continuity, but it's not unified unto itself. It's not a cohesive whole. It's part of a grand tapestry of continuity. It doesn't matter if he beamed in or not.
All right. Fair enough.
But his arrival makes the movie seem more significant, not because he's a big name, but because of his bizarre connections and his the weirdness of his arrival in this largely Star Wars centric story indicates that there is more at play than just somebody who wants to see Star Wars. And in a weird way, it kind of redeems all of that stupid Star Wars, Star Trek fanboy antipathy nonsense.
Yeah. So now, what do you think about, what we were just talking about, this fitting into the overall thing? I mean, how do you see it fitting in or not fitting in?
It fits in just as anything else. I've said it a bunch of times. Doesn't matter if they try to make it fit or if they don't try to make it fit. It fits. It all fits. William Shatner on a talk show talking about himself as William Shatner fits.
Yeah,
his weird albums fit.
Yeah, I guess I like looking at it a little more literally, and in doing that, I see this as taking place, well, maybe slightly before Free Enterprise, I guess. It would have been right around the same time, maybe slightly after Free Enterprise, actually, come to think about it. They would have been like the same year, I guess. And hey, he's in Vegas for the Star Trek convention, which is, I guess, also hopefully when he was there to...
Here's the thing. If at the next Star Trek convention, William Shatner comes up on stage and the Kurgan busts out of the wall and Shatner whips out a sword and they sword fight and William Shatner cuts off the Kurgan's head, absorbs the quickening and the prize, I will say, see? Everything fits.
Yeah. No. You're right. But yeah, I don't know. I think that this really does fit well. I like it, the idea that it's sort of a prequel to... This is, in a lot of ways, the episode one of the Shatner Cinematic Universe. It's, the prequel. And I like that. I think it's also a really nice sort of companion piece in a lot of weird ways to Free Enterprise, in that, while that's all about Star Trek fans, this is about Star Wars fans. And, the similarities pretty much end there. But I still think that it's kind of... cool in that way. I mean, you could say that whereas Free Enterprise has...
Well, they're both about people whose missions are saved by the arrival of William Shatner.
That's true, too. And while one is about, Star Trek fans, that kind of takes on sort of the feeling of Star Trek, It's sort of made with a Star Trek mentality, whereas this is made with more of a Star Wars mentality, where it's more about the spectacle and it's more about sort of the magic of it.
That's
kind of cool.
Very insulting.
I don't know. Maybe not. This isn't as good as Free Enterprise, but I still like it quite a bit.
Take that, Star Wars fans!
And I did, years and years ago, I put the question to both Kyle Newman, the director of Fanboys, and Robert Meyer Burnett, the director of Free Enterprise. I said, hey, you guys both made movies with William Shatner as himself. Do they take place in the same universe? And both of them were like, yep, for sure. Definitely, yes. Fanboys is a prequel to Free Enterprise. So there you go. It's official from the guys who made these movies.
Yep, and if they disagreed, it wouldn't matter.
No, it wouldn't. All right. Well, any final thoughts on Fanboys?
I find the movie largely, in absentia, when I'm not, watching it, there's something about it that I find very sad. And it's that it takes place right before the Phantom Menace release. And it's that point in history when it looked like maybe things were about to get really good.
I do like Fanboys a lot. I would say, aside from Free Enterprise, it's the best of the Shatner Cinematic Universe films. I kind of would like to have seen an unfiltered version of it, where it hadn't gone through revision after revision. And, I don't know, maybe one day we will, but I would kind of like to see what it is like in its purest form. But, have you watched the Goldbergs at all?
Yes.
I get the impression, I haven't seen it much at all, but I get the impression that the Goldbergs is kind of like the sitcom version of Fanboys. Like, I feel like they're very similar in terms of tone and content and stuff like that. Would that be accurate or not?
I don't really know. I haven't watched, like what I have watched of the Goldbergs was, like, a good stretch of, I guess, the current season when I just let Hulu keep going and it played a bunch of Goldberg episodes in a row.
Okay.
And I didn't stop them. So, okay. You know, there's that. It was all right. I don't really remember a lot of the specific, like, tonal elements, but it wasn't, it was strangely dated. In some ways, it kind of, I mean, the way it deals with, like, cultural touchstones, certainly similar.
Yeah. Regardless, since, you know, the creator of Goldbergs was a writer on Fanboys, I guess it would be safe to say that if you like Goldbergs, you might as well check out Fanboys, because why not? But I do like it quite a bit, you know? It's not super great, it's not super deep or anything like that, but it is kind of a touching story, and it is very amusing. And if you, you know, were around for all of the hype of episode one, I think you'd get a really big kick out of it.
Yeah, so. It's a road movie, so it has its ups and downs.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly interested in the pure version, because I imagine that, like a lot of road movies, its downs were really boring.
Oh, that could be.
It's just sort of how it goes. Road movies are very spotty.
Yep. But at the very least, you can see it for the Shatner of it all. So.
Yes.
Well, it's been fun talking about Fanboys today, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And celebrate his life and celebrate his work and his talent and his integrity. And if you get a tear in the eye, that's okay. That's he would approve. Spock would approve. And he'd say, "You humans, why do you feel you need to do this?" But he would approve.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Montalban to, like, walk around the corner and be like, "Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Riser 5.
The shuttlecraft. The shuttlecraft.
The orb."
Usually, you want to be able to capture it or isolate one, but you can't do that either, because it just keeps, you know, so it really does seem like a conundrum of, okay, how do we take this down?
You know, this minefield, they are the tribbles of war.
To the journey! One guy's like, "Why don't we just write better stories for Wesley?" And then the lead writer's like, "You out now!" The ready room.
Riker's all pissed because he can't prop his leg up with no gravity.
He tries, though. He tries.
He's trying. I can picture it. He's
but got then the just, momentum makes him somersault.
Which really just makes him look spread eagle.
Going in circles.
He's spinning.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. And that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, actually, it started out life as a comic book pitch. I originally came up with it to pitch to Wildstorm back when they had the comics license. The idea was it would be a one-year series that would run throughout the 12 calendar months of 2001, which was the 35th anniversary of Star Trek.
The 602 Club.
Sometimes that just works better because you can create and craft a story that's very compelling because you're not having to worry about what's happened other places. Okay, we have to make sure this is going to connect to this, and my guess is somehow Agent Carter is going to have something to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. later on, and maybe something that happens in Age of Ultron.
Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our show on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. And, of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
You sure can.
Yeah. One way that you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all of the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can go to trek.fm/contact, and there's a form there that you can fill out, and then we'll get an email. You can also send us a voicemail. Just look in the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. If you go to Twitter, you can find Trek FM's account at Trek FM. Facebook, facebook.com/TrekFM, where you'll also find the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at trek.fm and click the discussion tab on the menu bar. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank Audible for supporting commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. All right. Well, that's it for Fanboys, which is the last movie in the Shatner Cinematic Universe.
So far.
So far, yes. Up till now. But
I got my fingers crossed for the next Star Trek movie.
Could be. You never know.
They go back in time. Star Trek's a movie and TV show series. And they're like, wait, what? That's crazy. How is that impossible? And they're like, oh, who cares? This is better than what we would have done otherwise.
There you go. You never know. Well, next week we will be back to recap our series on William Shatner. And until then, you can find us right here on Trek FM, where I also do Standard Orbit with Drew. Or you can find the two of us on CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do Commentary Track Stars Off Topic with Brandon. Or you can email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter at comtrackstars. All right, well, that's it. Next week, we'll be back with our William Shatner recap.
Yeah.